Okay, Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with her boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So in Buddhism, meditation has a purpose. So it's like when we practice mindfulness and have kindness and compassion in our heart, when we learn to live a moral life, all these things, they make a foundation for the heart. And then that's when we come to develop meditation. Usually meditation is a calming process. So it's a process of samatha. And you know it's samatha by its result, that it leads towards calm, towards tranquility, towards ease and peace. And this is the purpose of making a peaceful mind. When we have a peaceful mind, then we have happiness in our hearts. And when we have happiness in our hearts, then it doesn't matter about the turbulence of the world, the turbulence of things going on around us. We have our own internal weather system. It's like the eye of the storm. We're not affected by the storm. And so, you know, when we just focus on meditation on its own, we need to also look at what is the foundation for meditation. What is the things that cause the mind to incline towards meditation? And when the Buddha talked about Kalyanamitta, spiritual friendship, he actually said that friendship with the Buddha was what he was referring to, friendships with the qualities of the Buddha. And what that means is actually seclusion. When we're secluded from the world, when we're secluded from unwholesome states, that's where the mind inclines, or the words seclusion is like viveka in Pali. And that's where the mind inclines towards peace. It doesn't need to stray out into the world to think about this and that. It's content in the present moment. And with that contentment, then that's when one, with that power of peace and contentment, then that's the ideal conditions for vipassana, which is like the then using directive thought to gain wisdom and understanding and insight. And so I think lots of people come to meditation because they want to relax and they want peace in their life. And that's very good. You know, that's still a wholesome endeavor. But the actual purpose in Buddhism is for liberation from suffering. It's seeing that we have these roots of like greed or you know, the thirst of desire or anger, irritation, malevolence, cruelty, which all comes under hatred, and then delusion, which is like where we lack spiritual vision, where our hearts are stuck in ignorance. And so these are the kind of the problems that are actually causing our minds to get stuck in suffering. And no matter what we do, when we fall into one of these unwholesome roots of the mind, because that colors the mind, then any actions that are formed out of that mental state will lead to suffering. Because it has a cause, then the effect will be suffering. And so the idea is with learning how our mind works, what our personality is, so we can start to train the mind in a way that will overcome what are our worst obstacles or hindrances. In nivarana is the Pali word. And for the hindrances of the mind, which are the things that cover over the mind. So there's this lovely simile of the hindrances, referring to them as like a bowl of water. And then each of the hindrances are causing the bowl of water to change in some way, like the desire is like turmeric or some kind of dye in the water, so the water isn't pure. You can still see your reflection, but it's changed. And anger is like the bubbling of the water, and so you can't see the surface. And why that is interesting is, at the time of the Buddha, the average person's mirror was a bowl of water. You know, and mirrors are actually opulent at the time of the Buddha, so monks were not allowed to have mirrors. Because they were seen as something, probably because they were seen as something opulent. But also I think that symbolic idea of reflection, when that's taken deeper, when you see the reflection of the water, you see yourself. But in Buddhism, it's like one of the similes of the Buddha is that he's like the sun. And so when you see the reflection, there's one teaching that says somebody who is a stream winner, which is one of the first paths of stream entry, they have a mirror of Dhamma in their heart. And so that mirror of Dhamma, you know, for me, well, that would mean it's like in your own heart, you can see the surface of the water and you can see the reflection of the sun, meaning that, you know, because we apply these teachings and then our hearts become luminous, and we start to extinguish suffering, and these lead to path and fruits. And when we see these things for ourselves, or any practitioner sees them for themselves, then that's like confirmation. So, and when you have confirmation, then that's when somebody is known as a stream winner, because they have actually seen the Dharma in their own heart. And so as long as they practice and don't become idle, then they will have that mirror of Dhamma in their heart. And that why that is interesting when we talk about meditation is because stream winner, if they practice, they can easily bring joy up in their heart. All they have to do is point their mind towards, you know, these qualities, and they can bring up inspiration, joy, tranquility. All the factors of enlightenment are like requisites. And the disciple, the right-hand disciple of the Buddha, foremost in wisdom other than the Buddha, was Sariputta. And Sariputta actually had one really nice simile. Because Moggallana on the left-hand side, he's like psychic powers, like, you know, incredibly deep samadhi. One day he made these monks weren't really practicing, so with his big toe he made the whole mansion shake that they were in to try and stir up some stir up some fear in them. And then the other side is Sariputta, so he's more wisdom. So he's somebody who would deeply investigate the Dhamma, so much so that he could keep the wheel of Dhamma turning, just like the Buddha could, because his insight was so deep. And then back to the seven factors of enlightenment, his simile for the seven factors of enlightenment were like a king in those days. A king would wear a different set of clothes in the morning, different set of clothes at lunchtime, and different set of clothes in the evening. And then he said, well, that's like the seven factors of enlightenment. You know, we wear one of the factors of enlightenment in the morning. So in the morning, you might use joy with your meditation. Lunchtime, you might use investigation. And in the evening, you might use equanimity. So you actually have this ability to wear these things as clothing for the mind. So it's kind of like the ability to use meditation depends on one's temperament. And, a lot of when we first start to meditate, when we first start to practice, it's just about putting the time in and being patient and trying to develop mindfulness, because the mind's going to go here and go there and go everywhere except on the meditation, until eventually we start to become skillful. And I was just saying earlier, it's like if you go to a kid in pre-primary and you ask them to write a thesis, they're not going to be able to do it because they're only in pre-primary. And the same thing is with our meditation. Unless we have, even if we have strong spiritual paramita, so past life development, we still have to develop a foundation in our practice. And we have to develop things steadily and properly, because otherwise, you know, we might build a structure that goes to the moon, but the next week it can fall down. So we don't want that. So it's better to build a slow, steady foundation. And that's why the Buddha, with his main teachings for lay people, with the sila, which is virtuous conduct, five precepts, the eight precepts for lay people. Generosity, which is actually the first one. So that's learning to give. Because in this world, the Buddha said, this world obsessed with the stain of miserliness. So, you know, it's a big issue for a lot of people, holding on to things just for the sake of it, you know, just in case. And so the Buddha even had a teaching of how to use money. And he broke it down into five different categories for lay people. And one of them was looking after your family. And one of them was actually giving to like the Sangha and the poor and things like that. So actually building generosity into your life. So you don't give until you have nothing, but you, one of them is also saving for a rainy day. So you're learning to prepare your life for difficulty when things because you never know what might happen. And so the then you have all of these things as a foundation. And then depending on your temperament, some people, they tend more towards calm. Or some people, they can't stop thinking. So maybe they're using a bit more wisdom. But eventually, this idea of samatha with vipassana, they go together. So you know, eventually you'll get to the point where you may meditate for a long period, but then you need to something different. So then you can contemplate for a time or do some walking meditation. And so it's kind of like this alternating. But usually, to begin with, you know, it takes a long time just to get used to your meditation object. And so simple is best. So in Thailand, they just have the Buddha. We say Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. And Buddha means awake. And also because it's the Buddha. So it's as if your mind goes off, then you can start thinking about the Buddha for a little bit and then come back. Oh yeah, I was meditating. Buddha, Buddha. And so the idea is simple meditation objects are good because then we're training the mind towards calm, towards quietude. And once we can sustain that power for long periods, then we can use that peace to contemplate. So it's not that, Ajahn Chah said, it's not that thoughts don't happen. Thoughts will arise, but they will arise in the calm. So because we have mindfulness there, because the mind is calm, then we can still skillfully deal with our thoughts and we can start to actually investigate things. And so that's the... And then if the actual process of becoming stream winner is learning to have right view, which is seeing things in line with truth, which is the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. And that's achieved by practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. And then the more you practice all of those eight factors, and eventually the mindfulness becomes strong enough that all the 37 factors of enlightenment come together in a moment called the Magasa Mangi moment. And that's where knowledge and vision arises at each of the four paths and fruits of enlightenment. So that's a very Buddhist understanding of meditation, but that's actually what we are doing. Not that I usually talk like that about these things, but just to give you a broader understanding. And a very useful practice, I've mentioned this before, is developing the Brahmaviharas. Because whenever I've noticed whenever I'm having difficulty with meditating, the Brahmaviharas are missing. So the Brahmaviharas are the metta, which is like universal loving kindness, universal wish for beings to be free from suffering, compassion, appreciative joy, celebrating in the good actions of others. So you see, all beings, may they enjoy the results of their good karma. So you actually have this heart of celebration. And then that's also, it has a bit of equanimity in there. And then that moves into equanimity, which is like this state of equipoise. But it comes through the other four emotions, so it's a very refined state. And then equipoise, equanimity, is very close to nirvana. So when the mind starts to incline towards equanimity, then that's, you know, getting close to the time where we can actually really contemplate. And so the idea is we do a lot of work and development, and every now and then we use our peace to work out what is the path and what is not the path through our own contemplation. And that leads to our own understandings. And then those understandings turn into insight. And then those insights will refine and lead us deeper in our practice. And so when we first start the practice, it may seem that things are very clunky, that the mind, you know, things are very difficult. And I find it, in the past, I found it useful sometimes to personify things. So if I was stuck in, you know, some difficulty, then, you know, I'd see, oh, well, what is this like? And then, I'm quite a visual person, so it's like, oh, it's like 100 cats running through the room. That's what my mind feels like. Or whatever, you know, because sometimes you're just beside yourself and you don't know how to deal with your mind. So it's like I found that was a useful tool to, rather than get angry or irritated at your practice, just to see, well, you know, it's hard work. And one of the great Thai Ajahns, Ajahn Tui, said it's the hardest work, you know, that there is to do. Because we're not only learning to be peaceful, but we're learning to face our own inner world and come to terms with it and learn to deal with it. And so it's not easy, because we have to look in our own bowl of water, look at our own reflections through all of these defilements, and then still decide to practice after that. I think that's a nice little talk, so we'll do the meditation now. Always try and start in a comfortable but upright position. We'll be meditating for about half an hour. Just try and make the body in a reasonably comfortable position. If you're tired, try and wake up a little bit. If you're drowsy, then try and be a little bit more alert. Just get yourself comfortable. Coming into the present moment. Put down the past. Whatever's happened in the past, don't need to think about it now. We can let it go. Put down the future. Future is uncertain. Think a million thoughts and something else might still happen. So put down the future. Now's not the time. Even the present. Don't worry about anybody in the room. Don't worry about anything at all. Just be comfortable here in the present. Start by relaxing the toes and the feet. It's bringing relaxation into the toes and the feet. This tingly feeling of relaxation. Allowing the feet and the toes to relax. Also, we're like putting our mindfulness into the toes and the feet. Mindfulness of the body is always very grounding. Relax the ankles and the lower legs. Bit by bit. Also suffusing them with relaxation. Becoming aware of them. Relax the knees inside out. Relaxation. Relax the thighs from the knees up to the hips, bit by bit. Suffusing them with relaxation, with peace, with kindness. becoming aware. Relax the hips, the waist, the weight of the body onto the seat or the cushion. Everything in this region completely at peace, like soft clouds fading away. Relax the belly from inside out. Belly rises with an in-breath, falls with an out-breath. Just tune into this natural process of breathing, relaxing the belly deeper and deeper. Relaxed but energized. Peaceful but awake. As the belly rises and falls with the breath. Relax the lower back and sides, the middle back and sides, the upper back. Completely at ease. Relaxing all the micro muscles, tendons. Stretching, relaxing. The spine. Solar plexus and diaphragm, the upper torso, chest, the heart. Imagine a blue sky, no clouds, letting go of all lingering thoughts and problems. The heart relaxes. Relax the lungs. I'm aware of the lungs as they fill up and empty. Filling up with an in-breath, emptying with an out-breath. The breath's with us all the time, but we rarely are aware of it. Relax the shoulders, right out to the tips, the upper arms, elbows. Relax the left elbow, the lower arm of the left arm, the left hand, left fingertips. Relax the right elbow, the right lower arm, right wrist, hand, fingertips. Whatever is happening is good enough. Just even the process of trying, the mind starts to settle down. Relax the neck. Everything inside the neck, the muscles, the pipes, the spine, the air passing up and down. Totally relax the neck, relax the chin, the lips, around the lips, the nostrils, the breath of the nostrils, the ridge of the nose, the bags under the eyes, the eyelashes, the eyelids. I'd notice a slight smile at the corners of the eyes. Letting go of any lingering problems. Just a smile of contentment. Relax the eyes themselves. The eyes tell so much about the tensions we are holding. Really pay attention to relaxing the eyes. The body is connected to the mind, the heart. As we relax this, we're also relaxing the mind. Just relax the eyes, letting go of any lingering tension, tightness, disturbance. Relax the lines of the forehead so they begin to vanish. Known as the furrows of worry. Let all the furrows of worry on the forehead vanish. Nothing needs to worry us. Just relinquish all concerns. Now is the time for peace. Relax the temples, the top of the head, the ears, the back of the head, the whole face, the eyes, and the whole body. Accepting any remaining feelings as they are with kindness. Good enough. Things don't need to be perfect. Just accept body and the feelings of the body as they are. And relinquish our desire for liking things. Relinquish our desire to dislike things. That you be irritated. Bring the heart to equanimity and peace. Don't need to react to our experience and thoughts. Things can just be like passing clouds, like bubbles of emptiness rising up. We don't have to get involved. Let the mind be at peace, and the stories, the thoughts and feelings just to float by. The heart of forgiveness, overcome any anger and irritation, heart of kindness, friendliness towards ourselves and all beings. Now is the time, if you have a meditation object that you prefer, to take it up. Otherwise I will guide a part of the meditation. Just allow, come into the present moment. Be present right now. Awareness of what is happening right now. Not fighting, not demanding. Just a kind, patient, friendly awareness. aware of an in-breath, breath coming in, aware of an out-breath, breath going out. What are the sensations or the feelings we're tuning into? The feeling of the in-breath, the breath body, the feeling of the out-breath, breath body. Some people are aware at the tip of the nose, some at the lip. Encouraging the simple awareness of just being with an in-breath in one moment and just being with an out-breath in the next moment. Like a mantra, use Buddha or awake, meaning we're waking up to the present moment. Usually you break it in half, like Buddha. It's just a way of to help cut out thinking. If you're comfortable without a mantra, and just stay with the solitude and peace. Try and keep things very simple. An open heart, welcoming whatever is. Buddha. What's the feeling of the in-breath? What's the feeling of the out-breath? Try and make our attention alive, have interest. Relaxed and gentle. What's the length of the in-breath? What's the length of the out-breath? Buddha. The joyful and peaceful heart. Good. go. I'll be silent now for the next 10 minutes. Just keep with a friendly and welcoming heart. The simpleness of an in-breath and an out-breath. welcoming, allowing, being friends with. How is the mind after half an hour of meditation? Is it more relaxed and peaceful? Is it joy, calm? What are the causes? What are the things that work? So we can become skilled in how our mind can meditate, give rise to peace regularly and easily. Share friendliness with ourselves, gratitude for the willingness to practice. Really wish ourselves gratitude, friendliness. Share this friendliness with those in this room. May they be well and happy. May they be at ease. Those on this property, all the little animals, kangaroos, birds, all those in Perth, all beings in Perth, be friendly and at ease. The humans, the devas, all beings in Western Australia, may all beings in Australia be at ease, may they know happiness and peace, may all beings in the world be at ease, may they know happiness and peace, may all beings in the ambrosial, all the realms of existence, may we share this friendliness of our meditation. May all beings be happy and at ease. So I hope that a little talk on enlightenment tonight, that you all cultivate some peace and wisdom in your lives. I will finish with a chant and a blessing. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father and the relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing. May all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba buddhanubhavena sada soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba dhamma nupavena sada soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba sangha nupavena sada soti bhavantu te.